When coalition forces withdrew from Afghanistan a year ago, thousands of Afghan interpreters and other locals who once stood shoulder to shoulder with our diggers were left behind. The Afghan Locally Engaged Employee, or LEE, visa program was meant to offer protection to those who risked their lives to work alongside our forces in Afghanistan. But 12 months on, many interpreters and their families remain stranded, with many in hiding from the Taliban. The Minister for Immigration, Andrew Giles, told Breakfast yesterday that the government is working through the backlog.
This year, 1,100 permanent visas have been issued, and of course we are working our way through an extraordinary demand for places.
Well, former Army Captain Jason Skanes is an Afghanistan veteran, and he continues to campaign on the issue via his organisation, Forsaken Fighters. Jason, welcome to you. We're a year down the line now. Do you know how many interpreters employed by the ADF remain in Afghanistan?
Look, it is a... We're 12 months down the road. You know, the government at the time was extremely slow to act on this issue. And as you mentioned, we had the Afghan LEE program, which was actually set up in 2008 for Iraq interpreters. And it was employed back then very, very successfully by the government in extracting Iraq and interpreters and their family members to safety. And the government since has been extremely slow to act on the Afghan LEE policy. Now, during the Senate inquiry last year, we talked about you know, the possibility of a master list existing to that could tell Defence and Home Affairs exactly how many Afghan interpreters were employed by Defence and how many of those had been certified. And during that inquiry, Defence and Home Affairs said that they didn't have those records and no such records existed. But I did give evidence at that inquiry, and I made reference to an Afghan translator database, which was held by a company, Mission Essential Personnel. And that data needs to be kept for 20 years. But unfortunately, that's administered by the US. So there is a master list that would tell us exactly how many work for Australian forces, but unfortunately the government has been reluctant on compiling or obtaining that list. On our books, we have around 800 interpreters and their families that still remain in Afghanistan.
And you mentioned you keep a record of those 800 or so interpreters and keep in touch with many of those former interpreters. What's life like for them in Afghanistan, especially in this week where we're looking back at the year since the US withdrew and the Taliban retook control? How are they surviving? How are they supporting their families?
Yeah, look, it's been an extremely trying and difficult year for many of those interpreters, you know, making their way. First of all, we had the advance of an emboldened and resurgent Taliban, a very brutal regime, advancing across the country, you know, back in July. And then we had the fall of the capital in August. We're 12 months on now, nearly 12 months on from our evacuation operation efforts as well. And very little has been achieved, really, and a lot could have been done prior to the fall of Kabul. And in fact, we were the only organisation that had written to government as early as April of 21, warning that the Taliban would resume control of airports, land borders and routes and prevent people from leaving, and that they needed to act fast on this situation and get these people out.
The LEE visa certification and processing program was set up specifically to give these people a pathway to Australia, but it's really been plagued by a host of issues. You mentioned some there, but has there been any improvement? I mean, are we seeing more people making it to Australia over the last year?
Yeah, look, I think very recently, you know, since July this year, we've had the department issue over 1,000 visas. So I think that is a really good step in the right direction. We seem to be making some gains in that regard. And I have seen some of those interpreters starting to trickle through now. We've had a couple land here only 2 weeks ago. We've had some families get reunited. But it's important, and I keep in contact with these individuals daily. And today About half an hour ago, I got a message. One of the Afghan interpreters who had a permanent visa, so not the 449 visa, the permanent visa, he arrived here late last year. He had to leave his wife behind because she wasn't on the visa, and she was staying with his father. Now, half an hour ago, he just advised me that his father has passed away. So his wife is going to find it extremely difficult to live in Afghanistan without a male there to support her and that type of thing. So she's going to find it extremely hard. And he is, you know, very, very concerned for her safety as well. And there's so many other cases and examples like that where the interpreters, you know, wife may not or family members may not have had passports and therefore they couldn't travel and they've had to leave them behind. And we really need to be making more of an effort to get in and get those people out.
Jason Skains is here. We're talking about the ongoing visa issues facing Afghan interpreters on RN Drive. You're with Andy Park. And even if interpreters find themselves able to get to Australia, it's not always straightforward for them to bring their families here. I mean, talk to me about those problems when it comes to that hope and dream about a big reunited sort of family when it doesn't actually stack up.
Yeah, look, as I mentioned, you know, some of the your immediate family, I think, is a priority. So your wife and children, and indeed that was what the Australian government said, that they would prioritise the Afghan leaves and they were prioritising women and children. Yet we have seen examples where the interpreters brought here, but they've had to leave their wife and children behind. And only recently we have had some of those families reunited, which is really great to see. But there are still many out there that are separated from their family and their loved ones. Now, some of the issues that many of those interpreters and their families faced was that passports were quite rare in Afghanistan. So not everybody could afford one. And generally the male would have one, but the wife and the children may not have a passport. And that proved to be a critical document that they required during those evacuation operations. So when they didn't have that document, they were unable to leave, whether they were in Pakistan, because Pakistan wouldn't issue a visa for them. So they were unable to leave Pakistan, or they were unable to secure a flight to get out of Kabul because they didn't, simply because they didn't have a passport. And those documents, you know, they cost in excess of a couple of $100 US. As we know, the economy's completely collapsed. People are starving. They're lucky to feed themselves. Let alone afford the money to go and purchase a passport.
Yeah, we heard last night on RN Drive from a former Afghan government minister now living in Toronto that there are reports of people selling their kidneys and even their children just to buy food. So it is becoming increasingly desperate. Do you think that many of these individuals are being caught up in the same backlog issues that we've seen across immigration, whether it's other visa programs or passports, etc.? I mean, do you think this is an issue the government is willfully ignoring in terms of our obligation to Afghan interpreters?
Yeah, look, I think historically we've faced a decade of complete neglect on this program, as in the leave visa program, has been completely neglected by the Australian government to that point. And that's seen a significant amount of those individuals that were deemed or certified by the Defence Minister and deemed at risk, remaining and languishing in Afghanistan, being at considerable risk and languishing there for several years. You know, and we've seen a lot of staffing cuts. The department wasn't resourced appropriately to assess and process these applications, and it just seemed people waiting extraordinary amounts of time to have their applications processed. And then when we've seen the emboldened Taliban advancing and the fall of Kabul, and now we've seen over 200,000 applications made for visas to come to Australia. I mean, a lot of these individuals and their families have worked or have significant links with Australian troops or the Australian government assisting us in our two-decade mission in Afghanistan. And we have an absolute moral obligation to make sure that government resources departments appropriately and that we process these applications in a timely manner. And we haven't done that over the past decade. It's been completely neglected. And I hope that a new Albanese government will show some enthusiasm to resolving this issue for those that are still remaining.
That is more or less the sovereign obligation that Australia owes, that debt to Afghan interpreters. But what about the personal? Why is it that you and other veterans are fighting so hard for these interpreters?
Yeah, look, I think, you know, during the evidence last year at the Senate inquiry, I made the statement that the government had implicated us, as in us veterans, in a lie. And, you know, we kept these interpreters. They were taking on a very difficult task, becoming an interpreter. They knew that there was significant risks in doing so. They accepted those risks. And at times, they were quite concerned. And as the soldiers on the ground, we would reassure our interpreters. We would say, mate, you're a friend, you're a mate, we look after our mates. You know, the Australian government won't let you down. And indeed, we knew that the visa program was there to assist them. And the government essentially implicated us in that lie because there was a decade of neglect on this program. And virtually hardly any of the interpreters or their families were making it here to Australia in a timely fashion. You know, most were waiting at least 2 to 3 years, some even 5 and 7 years to make it here to Australia. So it was moving extremely slowly due to the resource and constraints, I think. So, you know, a lot of veterans, and we've seen veterans burning their medals last year. You know, this is veterans feel very close with this issue because these are our mates. And something that's ingrained into soldiers is you don't leave your mates behind. And we feel implicated in the lie that the government said that we'd look after these individuals and their families, and we've hastily pulled out of Afghanistan and we've left them there.
Yeah, we certainly owe them a debt of gratitude, both at the national level and the individual level. Jason, appreciate your time tonight. Thank you so much.
Thanks very much for having me, Andy.
Jason Skains is an Afghanistan veteran and the founder of Forsaken Fighters here on RN Drive with Andy Park.
Listen to more great stories that take you beyond the headlines. Ask your smart speaker to play ABC RN.